You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Monday, 5 August, Chinese services PMI for July, 52.1, Japan, 53.7. Both good numbers. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Nkunza Sanlam, Private Wealth. So U.S. unemployment weakens, rate cuts from September, surely. We've also got Brent under pressure. And what the heck is happening in Japanese markets? That Nikkei is down 22% since highs of, mid-July. Claude Parsons from Bright Rock, understanding life insurance policies. Brett McKay from 10X Investments. We're living longer, so why do we manage? How do we manage fees, and are there bad times to retire? The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. First power, now water. Citizens in the private sector are increasingly having to make a plan. Some see this as a huge opportunity. Impact has gone into some water products. They've got results later today. Business day, high cost, sluggish markets deter new entrants, says Car Dealer's Body. Buildings alone with branding can cost 120 million rand to meet standards of global franchise firms. Morning markets, US was red, S&P down 1.8%, Nasdaq off 2.4%. Over in the East, Sydney's down 1%, Tokyo is down 7.9%, Hong Kong off 0.5%, Tencent a couple of dollars to the red. Commodities red, gold 2,486, Brent 77.28, platinum 962, palladium 879. The rand is 18.35, Bitcoin 54,300, and top 40 opening call 580 points to the red, 0.8% down.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Nkunza from Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, I want to chat Japan before we get to that. U.S. unemployment on Friday, 4.3. Expected was no change at 4.1. Also, the non-farm payrolls were weak and previous months had been downgraded. Jerome Powell pretty much said on Wednesday evening that September was rate cut time. The question now surely is it 25 or is it 50 points? September must be rate cut time.
Morning, Simon. Yeah, Lennon had a quote where he said there are decades when nothing happens and there are weeks when decades happen. And sure, goodness me, what a few weeks. So going back to this unemployment number, I mean, the U.S. economy added 206,000 jobs, but obviously are far less than expected. And of course, that unemployment number popping up to 4.1. And what does this mean for rates? I mean, it's a done deal. I mean, they're going to cut rates in September. I think the problem we've got is, as we've seen with Jay Powell's Fed in the past, is they are really behind the curve. They're too slow. You know, they're behind the curve on the way up, and they're going to be behind the curve way down, and especially when their G7 partners have all started that cutting. They normally wait for the Fed, and they haven't waited. So it looks like another policy error. But yeah, rate cuts are coming, 25 or 50. I'm not sure. I think given their hawkishness, probably 25, but we've seen the peak of the rate cycle for now.
Yeah, which is, I suppose, the good news. And of course, our MPC meets the day after the FOMC, so we should get that rate cut too. And we're seeing the story here. I mean, I'm looking at crude, I mean, fairly under pressure, 77 and change at the moment. I mean, this tells us a story of surely a global economy which is not growing gangbusters in terms of global GDP growth.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's only a few places that are really sort of, growing quite substantially. Funny enough, sub-Saharan Africa is one of those. But the rest of the world is clearly hearing slowdown. And where it becomes tricky, Simon, especially when you're sort of managing money, a lot of this data we see is a little bit backward-looking. Yeah. So, you look at these U.S. unemployment numbers, you could effectively argue the U.S. is probably in recession already, as same for the rest of the world. So, you know, something like the largest commodity in the world, energy, oil, it's going to take a little bit of a knock, but I'm quite surprised given the noise up in the Middle East over the weekend. It's actually not a little bit higher, but we're going to have that little tug of war between global economy and certainly conflicts around the world.
So now to pick your brain, because something is happening in Japan. Nikkei 225, again this morning. It peaked 11 July. It's down 22% from then. The yen, I mean, the yen and the Nikkei were both peaking sort of a little while ago. They're now flat for the year after being quite nicely up just a month ago. I mean, what's the story here?
Goodness, well, I mean, as you speak, I've just seen something come across on the wires. They've actually suspended futures trading with a circuit breaker. So, I mean, I think it's kind of ground zero for what was this giant sort of a quantitative easing, whatever you want to call it, experiment. You know, they had negative interest rates for decades. And we know that's not a normal world. And at some point, they had to unwind it. But, you know, the easiest trade in the world for large institutions and hedge funds was to borrow in a currency where you're literally getting paid to borrow negative rates, and then you invest it elsewhere, and you get a higher yield, and you put them in T-bonds, you put them in certainly into some things like emerging market equities. The problem you've got, Sam, is when you have to unravel that. And you have to, and it's a very small and crowded space. When you unravel that trade, and you have to sort of, you know, basically, you know, buy your yen back and, you know, reverse it, it gets very ugly very quickly. And I think that's what we're seeing now. And I, you know, I wonder, and I said to your fair, you know, there's going to be a few casualties in this. You can't have a move of this magnitude and across currency that is this big and not expect someone hurting somewhere. But it's certainly, you know, investors need to keep an eye on it. It's the other side of the world, but it's kind of where everything's happening at the moment.
It absolutely is. And in 4 weeks, the yen's gone from 160 to 142 against the dollar. It makes the ZAR look like a lazy currency. Nick Kunze, Portfolio Manager, Sanlam Private Wealth, appreciate the early morning time.
There's no postponing the inevitable. Your money knew this day would come. And you know what? It can hardly wait to start giving some back to you. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Clyde Parsons, BrightRock Chief Innovation Officer. Clyde, appreciate the time today. Life insurance, life policies, I mean, it's an important part of financial planning, particularly if you've got dependents, so that if you do pass on, they don't lose your income. It is a crucial cog in the bigger picture around that financial plan.
Good morning, Simon. Absolutely. It's a critical cog in that financial plan. As you say, that income, both for yourself and for your family and your dependents, is probably our biggest asset. And if you think about what we insure our assets that will have an impact on our lives if we were to lose them. So losing that ability to earn an income, both for yourself if you get disabled, but for your family if you were to pass away, is absolutely a critical part of financial planning. You're right.
I want to touch on income protection in a moment, but staying with life policies for now, there's also, I mean, it could just be a legacy. You know, I look at myself, for example, I don't have any dependents, so it's not an issue, but maybe I want to leave it to kids or somebody else if I'm able to. It can be more than just replacing. It can be legacy as well.
It can be, absolutely, Simon. It can be part of a bigger plan, which includes legacy, and long-term insurance or life insurance extends beyond that part of covering your salary to a legacy, covering debts, paying off your asset protection needs, looking after kids, looking after schooling into the future. And then also in the business space, life insurance is very useful, for example, in contingency liability for a business or future business legacy planning, you know, in terms of shareholding, who's going to get my shares and why, and how are they going to afford them. So it's got great uses across the spectrum.
I'd actually forgotten around the business. I mean, obviously, there's key man, but for example, I own a company with somebody else. If I pass, now my heirs own the company. That can be restrictive, but I can create a policy that will effectively enable the remaining shareholder to buy me out. They receive the policy, they buy me out, my heirs get money instead of shares.
Absolutely. And your business partner gets the confidence that your heirs aren't going to be meddling in the business going forward.
Yeah, no, 100% on that. You mentioned income protection, also crucially important. You know, one of them is obviously passing away, but one is just not being able to earn an income of any sort. And what we are seeing is sort of newer generation products that come with some flexibility between lump sum or guaranteed income amounts at the point of claim. And again, needs to be part of that bigger sort of financial plan.
Definitely, Simon. I think, unfortunately, income protection is often one of the more overlooked parts of life insurance planning. especially with younger clients, we think we're invincible. We think we don't need life insurance. And when you think about life insurance, you know, the clue's in the name, is it just when I die?
Mm.
But actually, protecting that income is critical and crucial. And you're right. We've seen incredibly exciting movement in the South African landscape in terms of unique new products coming to market that match clients' needs much better and give them far more certainty and efficiency in the way products are priced. For example, you mentioned the income and lump sum conundrum. Historically, clients were stuck between the devil and the deep blue sea. Do I buy a lump sum to give me a once-off payment for all the future paychecks I'm going to lose? Or do I buy an income protection product that pays me a monthly payment? And there's downsides to both. But as you mentioned, there are new age products come to market recently in South Africa that give clients and advisors the flexibility to wait until you're disabled to make that choice. So for example, someone with a bad prognosis, something like, let's say, cancer stage 3, where medically the prognosis is not good, if you've got an income protection which is going to pay you every month for the next 30 years, that's not going to be much use to your family.
Yeah.
Whereas if you could capitalize all those future 30 years worth of payments into one massive lump sum, that's going to give you much more value, which is what you've paid for. So being able to make that choice at claim stage and choose either the certainty of having a salary looked after, increasing with inflation or even faster than inflation until I would have stopped working, or the ability to lump sum and capitalize those and have the certainty of making that choice at claim stage is an example of that new flexibility and a feature actually, as far as we're aware, that was sort of pioneered in South Africa and has really taken off in our environment.
And I take the point, and it does give, I hadn't thought of it that way. There might be different reasons and you might have different needs and you don't know what they are until you actually need to sort of call on that policy. You mentioned inflation. Man, I don't know how much this is an issue now, but way back in the day, and we're going back 30 odd years. I mean, I remember a life policy, which I think it had a 10% annual increase, which at the time seemed okay. Fast forward 30 years, man, that policy has just become absolutely unaffordable.
Yeah, you're quite right, Simon. It's probably one of the most topical elements and components in the life insurance space at the moment. You know, BrightRock intermediates through independent financial advisors who can sell any product, and we always engaging on the ground with those advisors. Anecdotally, the feedback we're getting at the moment, as you say, those historic aggressive funding patterns are probably the biggest challenge to the life insurance space at the moment. BrightRock is very well poised, fortunately, coincidentally or deliberately, very well poised in that space. And we can talk about that, but it is unfortunately one of the biggest challenges we're facing. You know, globally, we're facing a cost of living crisis.
Yeah,
I don't have to tell you, everybody is squeezed on every level. And if you've got, as you say, a premium increase of 10%, I don't know about you, Simon, but my salary doesn't increase by 10% every year. And so that means just as a share of wallet, the proportion that that life insurance policy is stripping out of your takeaway spend is increasing at an unsustainable rate. It's just not feasible. And as you say, you compound that over a number of years. And the net effect is, unfortunately, when you need life insurance the most, you actually can't afford it. So that unsustainability is a massive problem. And we're very fortunate in that from the inception of BrightRock, it was one of the fundamentals we wanted to address and do differently and change the way the market worked.
And is that then just, I mean, to your point, I mean, I don't know if I've ever had a 10% salary increase. Is that just a really sort of making it inflation adjusted, or is there even perhaps more flexibility around that?
So historically, it stems from one of the only levers you've got to make insurance affordable on day one is to make it increase more later on.
Gotcha.
In other words, pay later. So it's disconnected a little bit from the inflationary effect. It's more from the trade-off between initial affordability and long-term sustainability.
Clyde Parsons, BrightRock Chief Innovation Officer, appreciate the time. And that's our poll today. Do you have life insurance? Does it fit your needs? I think some folks have and they don't need. Some folks do need and don't have. What's your view on your life policies? If you have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Your money can do more when it's investing with conviction. Our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to in-depth, broad market research and high-return investment strategies. So invest in a select set of companies with long-term structural growth potential with StanLib's Global Growth Fund. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting with Brett McKay, investment consultant, 10X Investments. Brett, appreciate the time today. In many ways, retirement hasn't changed much over the last, 100 years. You get to a certain age, you go home and start spending the money that you've saved over your working life. One big change is around longevity. I mean, a fit and healthy couple, I mean, you're going to make it to 90. You might even make it to 100. Retirement is becoming a lot longer than it used to be.
Yeah, quite right, Simon. So I speak to a lot of clients now, and I think the realization is that they're going to be living longer than they ever have before, whether it's due to medical advancements or just living a fit and healthy lifestyle, to make sure that their funds last them as long as possible, right up until the age of 90 or even in some cases 100.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm probably not going to make 100, but there are a lot of folks out there who listen who might. I mean, one of the other stark realities is that you might retire at a bad time, and that could be high inflation. It could be changes to the law. There's not a heck of a lot you can do about that, but there is one thing I think a lot of folks misunderstand. They think at retirement, it's move out of equities, move into bonds and cash. But if you're going to be 30 years in retirement, that's not necessarily the truth. You're still going to have a lot of equity in your investment.
100% correct. It's so important to still beat inflation. And I think what we've seen in the past is to beat inflation, you need to hold equity or shares in your portfolio. And it is, a misconception with retirees going into retirement of you need to suddenly park your funds in money markets or be conservative, when actually you've got a good 30 or 40 years to still grow your capital. So you want to make sure that you're beating inflation, especially if you are drawing an income from your savings. You want to still grow your capital and make sure that that income that you are taking is at least sustainable and keeping in line with inflation too.
And of course, the big one, and we have seen significant changes in the industry in the last few decades, has been around fees. And the change has been fees coming down. But there are a lot of them. There's advice fees, there's administration fees, investment fees, there's VAT, there's the dreaded performance fee. There's a lot of fees laid into these products in many cases.
Quite right. Yeah. So what you want to try and do is get your, and that essentially is a summary of all the fees and charges that you will be paying on that investment. Earlier you get that on, the better off you're going to be, because then you know if you're essentially in the right product or not.
Is the EAC the sort of bottom line industry standard fee? If I ask for an EAC, is that, you know, comparable across products and providers?
Correct, yeah. So it's standard across the industry. And essentially what that mainly covers is your administration charges or management fees, portfolio fees or any underlying fund fees, advice fees, performance fees, and then VAT as well. So yeah, that really is a summary of everything that they will charge you. And like I said, the earlier you get that, the better off you're going to be.
What is, and maybe I want to say, what is an ideal fee? Maybe I should say more directly. I mean, if I'm a 10X client, I mean, what fee would I be looking at paying there? I mean, I remember days of, you know, the high single digits. Those are long gone. I mean, what is fair these days? 1%, 2%?
Yeah, I'd say anything under, you know, 1.5. Anything under that is certainly a suitable fee. It does depend on if there are layers in terms of if you've gone through an advisor or if you've gone directly through to the channel. Whereas 10X, you can come directly through to us. And yeah, most of our clients pay about 1% or less.
Of course, there's another fee. You hit retirement, you take your cash, you now go and buy yourself a living annuity. You might also get a guaranteed, but that's an insurance product. We will park that aside. There's, of course, fees here. And if you're doing a drawdown of, say, 2.5% and you think you're doing great because that's a nice size drawdown, you might have a 2.5% fee, which effectively doubles your drawdown. Fees don't end when you hit retirement.
Correct. And I think when you get to retirement, that's when fees probably become the most important aspect. Just because, like you say, you know, if you're taking 2.5%, but your fee is now 2.5%, not only are you paying yourself an income, you know, you're paying the same income to the provider. So it's very, very important, especially with living annuity clients, to look at your costs, lower your fees. It doesn't sound like a lot, but a percent or two saving is an extra percent or two that you could either pay to yourself or an extra percent or two that can go back into the fund and compound and grow your capital to ensure that it's sustainable. So yeah, very, very important when it comes to retirees and looking at those fees and that EAC.
And there's three parts to it. One is pre-retirement. And again, shop around, you can go and find and you can move your Reg 28 product. That's no problem. Post-retirement, it's the living annuity. Can we move living annuities? If someone's listening and they're saying, whoa, hang on, I'm paying a giant fee, is it possible to move them between providers?
Yes, definitely. You can switch providers. Usually there's no cost involved when you're switching from one living annuity to another as well. So that's quite nice. And yeah, to switch providers, it's actually a simple process. And what's nice with the transfer across as well is there's no disruption in the member's income. So they continue to receive the income as they would have. The only difference now is they're in a new portfolio with the new provider, mm-hmm. and they're paying a different fee to what they were currently paying.
We'll leave it there. Brett McKay, investment consultant, 10X Investments. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. We're chatting with Jimmy Moyaha on Friday. The Bureau for Economic Research predicting local GDP for 2025, 2.2%. We asked if we thought you could achieve that, and it was equally split between the three options we gave. You third said yes if load shedding stays gone. Third said could do even better. And the last third said nope, not likely. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Impact results.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.